1, 2, 3.
Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, it's the anniversary of one of the most important hard rock debuts of all time.
Ed and I always had this whether it's a, what do you call it, itch or a desire or a need to express ourselves a certain way. And fortunately, we found music. And fortunately, it happened at an early age. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because that's why some people turn to drugs, some people turn to violence, some people turn to football. Whatever it is, you need to have some way to express yourself.
Girl, you really got me down. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing.
It was like a steady process. We were offered gigs, big gigs, and we refused most of them, you know, because we wanted to work on a solid following.
Hey, this is Michael Anthony.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Yours truly, David Lee, right here with Redbeard.
There are basically two ways to affect rock history: in pure popularity, or in the influence a musician or group exerts on other musicians. In the case of Van Halen, their electrifying debut album in February 1978 did both. Just as Led Zeppelin I had ushered in the first era of hard rock almost a decade earlier, drummer Alex Van Halen, bass player Michael Anthony, singer David Lee Roth, and extraordinary guitarist Eddie Van Halen set the next standard with electrifying energy, guitar-playing innovation, and a polish previously unheard of in this genre. Ranked by Rolling Stone at number 415 on their top 500 albums of all time, Van Halen's debut has so far sold north of 10 million copies just in the U.S. alone. Father Jan Van Halen, a professional sax and clarinet player, emigrated from the Netherlands with his wife and two sons, settling in Pasadena, California in 1968. Older brother Alex and Eddie both learned a profound lesson on the actual boat trip to America. Alex Van Halen is first.
When we came over on the boat from Holland, Ed and I played piano on the boat, and we noticed that after we did this, we got to sit on a special table for dinner. We had a little special treatment and a little bit
now
of that.
I got all the girls.
But no, it's just ever since we were kids, the vibe, if you want to call it, it's the ambience, the energy that surrounds musicians, I mean the true artists, is something you cannot describe. You know, the best artists that I've seen, sometimes they don't care about the money, they don't care about anything, just about their art. And yes, there is a balance between being so centered and so self-indulgent in your own art that nobody else can relate to it. On the flip side of the coin, there is a line where, like for instance with my dad, I used to work with him, I started working when I was 13 years old, and I watched him as he would work a room. And by working a room, I don't mean as a vaudeville kind of guy. What he tried to do was elicit the, excuse the cliched, politically correct term, of the inner child in people. By the end of the evening, people would be sitting there in their underwear.
He would have them in the palm of his hand.
Yeah. But not to control them.
No, no, no.
But to bring out that
yeah.
aspect of it.
Just forget their problems for the evening.
Exactly.
Just, you know, just
yeah.
to take them away.
And to watch that was just incredible. Amazing. It was amazing.
We'll be right back.
February 1978 Van Halen debut. For most Americans, Running with the Devil is the first song we ever heard by Van Halen. The shared experience of immigrating to America may have strengthened the bond between the Van Halen brothers, according to original bass player Michael Anthony.
Yeah, hey, well, I'll tell you, working with Eddie or playing music with Eddie and Alex from the first time that I met them, you could tell that there was a bond between these two guys. And I mean, I have three brothers who have all played in bands or whatever. And one of my brothers, who's a year and a half younger than me, played drums in the first couple of bands that I was in. And it was like the first disagreement, boom, 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 and that's it. He's out of the band, and you know, and that's it. But on a musical level, Eddie and Alex have always had a bond that, even after knowing them and have been playing with them for over 20 years, it's still there's still a part of it that I'll probably never be able to permeate, you know. It's just that bond that they have. There is a strong bond between them, and I mean, I've never met any brothers that play together musically that have been as tight as Eddie and Alex.
Even after settling in Pasadena, Father Jan Van Halen and his wife insisted that the Van Halen boys study classical piano. First, Eddie Van Halen.
Okay, we were both being trained to be like Vladimir Horowitz. We actually went to Long Beach College and did the piano contest where you practice one piece of music, one piano recital all year long, and I would. Alan would do it the day before and win third prize. I'd have to practice all year, and of course I won first prize, but he would just do
different
it the
age
night
group.
Before.
Different age group.
Yeah. I know, just, still, the night before, he'd go, oh, yeah, I got it. He'd still come in third. You know, it's like being in the Olympics and the day before.
You do two push-ups.
Yeah, not even stretching and coming in third, you know. Yeah, so I always had to work a little harder now in school and everything. But our parents wanted us to be classical pianists, like Vladimir Horowitz, you know, to be true, whatever. And at around the age of 12, you were 13, I was 12, yeah. Around there, we got into rock and roll, Beatles, Dave Clark 5, and I love Dave Clark 5, so we used to have the cardboard boxes,
yeah.
And we used to bang on those things. And
the empty ice cream tubs that they used to have at 31 Flavors.
And, and also the model car boxes, yeah. We'd leave some of the plastic in, yeah. So it sounded like a snare.
Yeah.
But, well, from there, we obviously my mom and dad were pretty uptight that we kind of lost interest in piano. So they convinced Al somehow to take flamenco guitar lessons, which is still respectable. Okay, I bought myself a drum kit, $125 St. George Japanese drum set, paid by having a paper out. This is the way I remember it. While I'm out doing the paper job, Al was playing my drums, and he just got better, and drums came natural to him, whereas it was work for me. I just said, take my damn drums, I'll play your effing guitar, and
he won the deal, because the guitar and the amp was worth about $350.
No,
the drums are worth about $125.
Al's a Spanish guitar. It wasn't the one that we bought from Hans. No,
the silver tone.
That's not when it happened. I never got that guitar. Mom and Dad got rid of it before I ever got a chance to get to that.
All right. Now here's my version.
No, I'm just saying. Guitar came natural for me, and drums came natural for Al. So it was a logical thing.
When I play guitar, I could play the chords. I could read. I could do the strumming, the rest of the thing. But to me, there was no connection with the instrument. To me, it was just a piece of wood with vinyl strings on it. Ed picked up the guitar one time, and I just heard him.
Well, that's the problem. See, I put steel strings on it.
No, yeah. No, but it didn't take a genius to hear that Ed had a connection with it. And it's that simple. And, of course, the part about the drum set and the paper route, sure, that was all true. But if it hadn't been for the fact that Ed had that connection with the guitar, it wouldn't have mattered.
If it hadn't been because he got better on the drums, I never would have played his guitar.
Okay. Yeah!
Don't ever let me be. I only wanna be by your side. Please don't ever let me be. I only wanna be by your side.
Van Halen covers The Kinks on their debut with laser-sharp cover of You Really Got Me. It was also the first appearance of those stacked vocal background harmonies on the chorus, soon to be a Van Halen signature sound. Here's original Van Halen lead singer David Lee Roth.
As a riff, it's designed to be the killer riff, but you pick up on all these vocal harmonies that come in on the choruses, you know, that come in on those B parts. That's my old Motown learning. You know, I went to grade school, junior high, high school that were 90%, 95% black and Hispanic, you know, when they started integrational busing over in Pasadena, California. But everything I was listening to at the youth club dance was Standing in the Shadows of Love. But that's where the harmonies come from. And that dates back to early Van Halen stuff when we had lead bass, drums, and me. And we were playing cover tunes in all the bars. We'd play 200 songs by other people, whether it was Elton John or the Ohio Players, James Brown, Led Zeppelin, you name it. But we had no keyboard. We had no pumping brass section, you know, and this kind of thing. So what are we going to do to add a little color to the chorus? We'll sing. Okay, a novel idea. Let's get some harmonies going here, which to this day is fairly rare in big rock sound. You'll hear a lot of vocals stacked up in unison. It's kind of a gang thing. We say we want wild. This kind of thing. But as far as 4 and 5 part harmonies and things like this, this is the Temptations played to the background of Heartbreaker by Led Zeppelin.
Once the Van Halen brothers finally found their respective instruments, it didn't take them long to get noticed. For instance, Michael Anthony was taking notice even in high school.
Basically, every band that I was in, from the first band that I ever started playing in, I lead sang in all the bands that I was into. I don't know why. I guess I had a pretty decent voice back then. But I actually first heard about Eddie and Alex when I was in high school, and I was then playing in a band called Snake. Very original name. And I remember there was a carnival that our high school would have every year on the football field, and their band happened to be playing, and they were called Mammoth. It was Eddie Alex, and their bass player then, his name was Mark Stone. And Eddie was doing the lead singing, and they were playing Cream, and I remember them playing Grand Funk Railroad, and doing it like exactly. And I remember thinking, wow, check this guitarist out. He's playing the stuff note for note. They did like the whole Live at Leeds thing. And it was the first time that I actually ever saw those guys play. And I was pretty impressed by it. But then back then, when you're in a band and you see the other guys in bands, everybody's kind of like sneers a little bit at each other because, you know, there's a bit of this rivalry and whatever going around. But it was pretty cool at that point, though, because they were from Pasadena and I was in the Arcadia, California area. But that's the first time that I ever saw them play. And actually, sometime after that, I think it was a year before I actually joined the band, that Dave Lee Roth joined the band. And they happened to be playing a gig at Pasadena High School. And I was still playing in this band, Snake. And we happened to be opening up for these guys. We had a PA system that I used to borrow from one of the teachers at Arcadia High School where I went. And it just so happened that their PA blew up during sound check. So I remember Eddie coming up to me and asking if they could borrow our PA. And I said, yeah, sure, fine.
Van Halen's debut in early 1978, that's Ain't Talking About Love. Coming up next, you'll find out the origin of the first Van Halen lineup and who first sang lead vocals. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the Van Halen debut.
Hey, this is Michael Anthony.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Yours truly, David Lee, right here with Redbeard.
Thanks, gentlemen. Welcome back. Drummer Alex Van Halen and his younger brother, guitarist Eddie, were getting a following in high school in their band called Mammoth. Eddie pulled double duty back then.
That was Alex, Mark Stone, and me. That's when I used to lead sing. I'll never forget playing at the Velasco's party, which was like a semi-weekly bash that we'd play. Uh-huh. Somebody's got a room not much bigger than this, except about, you know, as many people as you could cram in there. And I remember Mark's parents came.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of a song.
His brother.
And his parents, too.
Yeah.
Okay. We're in the middle of a jam playing. And here come his parents and his brother, and they just take him home.
Because we were
in the middle of a song.
Because we were a bad influence on him.
Here's a guy
who
was going to school to be a pharmacist. He's making LSD molecules out of whatever you call it, the play school.
You know, the balls with the sticks, you know, how you make molecules.
And they're worried about us.
Ed and I think.
Which is normal. I mean,
they were wild kids that were like.
I got expelled from all them schools.
No different than I think anybody else who is searching for something in their life. When
we never hurt anybody, put it that way.
Nothing was ever done maliciously. Yeah. But Ed and I always had this whether it's an itch or a desire or a need to express ourselves a certain way. And fortunately, we found music. And fortunately, it happened at an early age. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because that's why some people turn to drugs, some people turn to violence, some people turn to football, whatever it is. You need to have some way to express yourself. And, when we were in our so-called formative years, Ed and I used to get in some rumbles, you know, big deal. But when we finally got the band, what we thought was in a reasonable position of competence, if you want to call it that, we used to play for the Hell's Angels. Remember those guys? You know, just sit there and hang around with a bunch of guys. I was just waiting to make a mistake, waiting for having all those guys grab a chain and just wrap it around my neck and say, "Hey, you made a mistake, mother."
You
Jamie's crying comes from the first Van Halen debut. The stacked vocal harmonies really stand out in an otherwise simple, straightforward arrangement. Here's original Van Halen lead singer David Lee Roth.
It's purely a case, Redbeard, of history for all the wrong reasons. All we were trying to do was cover up that we were too cheap to hire a keyboard player. All we did was try and cover up the idea that, no, we didn't want a rhythm guitar player, you know, and this sort of thing. So you got to give a little color, a little life. And there's so many things you can do with voices, but it's very difficult, and it takes hundreds of hours of rehearsal, of repetition to get it right, to really make it zing, not sing, but zing, pop, fizzle, you know, like that. Most people, most musicians, singers, whatever out there have the facility to do it. It just takes literally hundreds of hours. And you really have to enjoy the music to get yourself through a program like that.
After letting the Van Halen brothers borrow his PA system, Michael Anthony wisely stayed in touch.
After that night, I remember Eddie and I got together and we were talking a little bit. And it wasn't that long after that one gig that a mutual friend of Eddie's and mine who was in, I think, a music class with Eddie. And this was right around 73, 74. And we were all going to Pasadena High School. That he heard that they were getting rid of their bass player for whatever reason. And my buddy who... His name is Mike Franceschini. I have to mention that because I will always be indebted to him for this. He said, "Hey, how about this guy that I know, Mike? Because I think that he's not really happy in the band that he's in." And I got a call from Eddie and Alex one night, and they asked me to come over and jam with them. And I actually asked one of my brother Bob, to come down with me because I was nervous. These guys at that point. I had heard that they were playing Gazzari's out in Hollywood, and I was playing. I mean, we were doing okay. I was just playing jeans and t-shirts, backyard parties, things like that, and high schools. I went and jammed with them, and it was in a little garage they were rehearsing in Pasadena. And Roth was not there. It was just Eddie and Alex, and I set up, and we jammed and jammed and jammed. And I have a feeling they put me through every kind of beat change they could think of. And when we were through playing, they asked me if I'd like to join the band. And my mouth kind of opened up a little bit, and I went, sure.
So why did this new lineup change their name to the Dutch surname of the brothers? Michael Anthony has the answer.
It was before I even joined the band that they changed it to Van Halen. I think the reason that they did was because they figured naming it after a person in the band's name, something like that, that the name grows with the band, you know, rather than calling it something like the Beatles that may be dated. Oh, I don't know. No, excluding the Beatles. But, you know, something that may be like a dated name that they decided to call the band Van Halen. And that was the name of the band when my band opened up for them at Pasadena. When we played that show, I remember standing at the side of the stage and being very impressed with Eddie and Alex. And Dave, he had like his hair was painted. He had like this skunk stripe going down the center of his head, and he was wearing this little vest. And comes strolling over to me. He goes, "Hey, how do you like my boys?" You know, it was funny. Dave was always into like the entertainment part of it, really. You know, because it was like right after I joined the band, all of a sudden I found myself wearing a gold lamé outfit. And believe me, if you've ever played at a backyard party with all your buds are hanging out, drinking beer, and you come walking through the crowd wearing a gold lamé suit, boy, believe me.
So I told her,
Feel Your Love Tonight, great background vocals from Van Halen's First. Next, find out just which songs you need to know to play the clubs from Pasadena to Hollywood Sunset Strip, and how Van Halen built that following without any outside help. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio for the anniversary of Van Halen.
Hey, this is Michael Anthony.
Hi, I'm Alex Van Halen, and you're not.
Hey, this is Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
Yours truly, David Lee, right here with Redbeard.
Welcome back in the studio for Van Halen's First. Original bass player and background singer Michael Anthony remembers how Van Halen built a sizable following without even a manager.
Well, a lot of flyers. We spent a lot of money at the copying machine places. We used to actually when we were gigging, whether it be for a party or a club or whatever, we'd make up our own flyers and we would just flyer the hell out of everywhere. We would promote our own shows at the Pasadena Civic Auditorium. We would draw, like, just on word of mouth and flyers, 5,000 people to these gigs. And we would go to, like, Aerosmith concert over at Anaheim Stadium, flyer all the cars. You know, we'd say, okay, Ed, tonight you're going to hit Pasadena High School. Mike, you hit Arcadia High and go over to Monrovia and Dave and Al, you know, and we would all get our section and we would go out and just flyer. And we really tried to build up a following rather than look for a record contract. Because there became a point to where it was like all of a sudden, hey, you know, it's happening. Let's work on a following, because if the following is there, then it at some point somebody's going to have to stand up and take notice of the band.
Succeeding in the clubs in areas as socially diverse as Pasadena to the Hollywood scene meant becoming a literal human jukebox for the band. In an interview with Rock Band Entertainment editor Tommy Nast, Van Halen's Michael Anthony remembers.
You know, it was really weird because right after I joined Van Halen, I was learning, like, I don't know how many songs a day, because they had like a repertoire of, I don't know, like 400 songs, everything from original material to Get Down Tonight by, Casey and the Sunshine Band, you know. But if you wanted to play like Gazzari's or any of these places, you had to play a lot of that material. And here I was, I'd just been playing in these local bands, and they had been playing at Gazzari's, I think, not very long before I joined the band. But it was weird because it was like a whole different island, the Hollywood scene. You know, it was like, you know, glitter and platform shoes and all that stuff. And so we had to kind of like get our fan base to come out to Hollywood. And a lot of times they wouldn't, you know, it was like, oh, Hollywood? No, we're not going to go out there. So we almost had to like build our own following again playing out in Hollywood.
First Alex, then Eddie Van Halen in the studio.
It's very strange because I'll never forget, Dave liked to think of himself as not a Bowie clone, but he dressed, you know, with the clogs and the funny-looking pants and the hair standing on end. So when we were in Pasadena, everybody thought we were a Hollywood band. Then we come to Hollywood, and, of course, Ed, Mike, and I are in jeans and T-shirts, and they thought we were a Pasadena band. So you can't win for losing, you know what I mean? You know, just this. And we played.
We auditioned the Handlebar Saloon in Pasadena, our hometown club, okay? The first time they wouldn't hire us because they claimed that our audience was too rowdy. I mean, yeah, they were. I mean, I'll never forget, we played a backyard party once. It was written up in the paper. 19 people got busted and stuff. Four cop cars got turned over. I'll never forget. A group of guys took one cop. They took his handcuffs and handcuffed him around a tree. With his own handcuffs. But anyway, yeah, that was, you know, wild teenage, you know, that was our audience.
But again,
they wouldn't hire us for that, okay? Yeah. Then we start playing Hollywood, and we come back, and then they say, no, you're too Hollywood.
Dedicate one to the ladies. Summertime sip, babe, need something to keep you cool. Now summertime sip, babe, need something to keep you cool. Better look out now, though, Dave's got something for you. Tell you what it is. I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by. Oh my, my, I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on a second, baby. I gotta put my banana Dixie cups
all flavors and push-ups too. I'm your ice cream man, baby. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Hold on one more. Well, I'm usually passing by just about 11 o'clock. I never stop. I'm usually passing by just around 11 o'clock. And if you let me cool you one time, you'll be my regular stop. All right, boys. I'll put my banana Dixie cups on flavors and push up to 100 ice cream, man. Stop me when I'm passing by. See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy. Yes, I'm your ice cream, man. Stop me when I'm passing by. I'm your ice cream, man. Stop me when I'm passing by. This is all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
Original Van Halen lead singer David Lee Roth and band. David Lee recalls how he discovered rock's roots.
Well, the bands that gave me that poetic sense, that spirit sense that vaccinated me. Oh, wow. The first time you heard Honky Tonk Woman, the first time you heard those opening riffs of Brown Sugar, the first time you heard that opening riff of Heartbreaker by Led Zeppelin, and the first time you heard the guy in ZZ Top go, how, 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 and then went back through the library when somebody told you where he got that from and started listening to the Howlin'
Otis,
Wolves
and
Otis Rush and all these people, you know. Yeah, that vaccinated me, because at that point in time, I'd gotten fired from the stable, and I needed a future. I needed some direction.
Van Halen's future was about to go in a distinctly upward direction. You see, Gene Simmons of Kiss helped them record some demos, but nothing really transpired until one unremarkable night Van Halen played at the Starwood Club. Warner Brothers Records president at that time, Mo Austin, and acclaimed record producer Ted Templeman were there too. Alex Van Halen starts.
We didn't pursue a record deal.
We didn't know how.
Yeah, we had a couple of meetings here and there with people, you know, with the breadsticks,
yeah,
and that kind of thing.
But that didn't pan out. You know, it was a year later that after Gene tried to help us, that Ted Templeman and Mo Austin saw us at the Starwood.
It was 99-cent beer night. And three,
rainy Monday
three,
night, if
and
I
three
remember,
people
right?
were in the audience, yeah. And two of them were Mo and Ted. Ted was at that time, I think, one of the most purest kind of recording kind of guys. He wasn't interested in special effects. He wasn't interested in overdubbing. As a matter of fact, my personal feeling, I don't know if Ed's going to disagree with me, but at the time, I would have liked to have the record to be more like a Zeppelin record, which had layers of sound. But Ted had nothing to do with it. He wanted to record the purity of it.
That was my fault, because I'd never been in a studio and I didn't know how.
But that's okay, because
we just played live.
Yeah.
Because I'd never when you write songs and you just play them live, I got a solo, so I didn't know. Then I'd have to write rhythm parts underneath. I wasn't prepared to do that, so blame me. It wasn't Ted's fault.
After working hard in the clubs for almost 5 years, things really happened quickly once Van Halen signed that record deal with Warner Brothers. Embraced by American rock radio upon release, the first Van Halen album initially sold 3 million copies and has since gone on to sell more than 10 million copies in the U.S. alone. Former and original bass player Michael Anthony.
It was all very overwhelming from that standpoint. I mean, like when we were playing again at this club Starwood, and that's where the whole thing actually came about. Ted Templeman and Mo Austin, who was then the big chairman guy, they came and saw us. It was like our jaws just dropped, because at that point you never know who was gonna show up or not, because there's always, oh, this person's coming tonight or that person's coming next week, and at the end of the night you still see the little reserve cards sitting on a table, no one's there. But after the album came out, one thing I really thank God for is that it was a steady building process. And even though I thought our music was great, I'm glad we didn't bust onto the scene like maybe a Boston or a band like that around that time, where all of a sudden they're thrown into the stadiums and whatever, because I think we really appreciate the success a lot more. And I remember our first tour we opened up was supposed to be like 6 weeks opening up for Journey. And they just came out with, I think it was their Infinity album. It was their first album with Steve Perry. And, we played all the Masonic temples and the small 2,000-3,000 seaters. And after a while, we were doing good. After a while, it was almost like they wanted to kick us off the tour at the end of every week. And their people were telling them, no, you better keep them on the tour, because I think they're selling a lot of tickets. They're doing good. But it was like a steady process. We were offered gigs, big gigs, and we refused most of them, because we wanted to still just work on a solid following.
ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-wa, ba-bum-bum, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-wa, ba-bum-bum, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-ba-doo-ba-doo-wa, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-wa, ba-bum-bum, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-ba-doo-ba-doo-wa, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-wa, ba-bum-bum, ba-ba-da, shoo-ba-doo-wa.
I'm the One, sang David Lee Roth with Van Halen from their first album, Amazing. This episode of In the Studio is dedicated to the gifted guitarist Eddie Van Halen. The world misses his phenomenal prowess on the guitar, and I miss the joy he clearly derived from sharing it with us. Most of all, I miss that little kid grin. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking Eddie and Alex Van Halen, David Lee Roth, and former member Michael Anthony. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2018. All rights reserved. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.